This is the World Cup Sound of Football.
Hello and welcome everyone. Hello und willkommen jeder to the World Cup Sound of Football podcast today. You see, didn't know I could speak Italian, did you? Yesterday's podcast sees us covering the second round match between England and Germany. And by us, I mean me, Chris Oakley, Terry DeFellin and Graham Sibley. Hello Terry and Graham.
Hello.
Hello Chris.
Well, it's frankly a miracle that we find ourselves watching England in the second round after three distinctly below par performances in the first round. But as it is, a 1-0 win over Slovenia has got England through, and this will be a fascinating encounter, I reckon, because you've got two teams who are playing rather below par. And starting with yourself, Graham, I mean, people have been referring to the fact that it's kind of a match between Germany, who have got a lack of experience, but definitely got youth and vitality on their side, against England, who are an ageing squad, shall we say, the golden generation, as some people put it, but who are experienced. So can you see either side with those attributes getting an advantage over the other?
I think if you look at it on paper, I think you've got to look down man for man on each of those two team sheets and think, mm-hmm. yeah, England comes off better in so many yep. parts of it. And that's the sort of fact you can't really steer away from. And when you add experience to that as well, I dare say it, but you have to, thinking logically, you know, thinking with your head rather than your heart, you have to think, you know, England, you know, should win this one. Yes. That said, I mean, Germany are Germany, and they had an absolutely amazing qualifying tournament, and you know, they showed against Australia in this tournament what they can do against a team that isn't on top of their game. And you know, they do have players of really, really good talent and who are on fire in this tournament. Ozil has showed everyone what he's capable of, you know, which
certainly has.
Beforehand he hadn't. I mean, when he's been playing like at club level, like in the UEFA Cup or the Europa League, he's never really sort of like shown what he's really capable of, say in the Bundesliga. Mm. And I think he's been like quite a surprise to a lot of people. Certainly, you know, and he's very young, and you know, certainly seems to have all the talent available. So I'm sure Terry will be able to tell us more about him.
Well, I was just going to say, Terry, I mean, just hitting on that point, I mean, I read someone somewhere saying that Japan have proved that you don't necessarily need, you know, depth of experience. If you've got young players with lots of running in them, you can actually get far in this tournament. But will it be enough against England?
It could be enough against England, certainly.
If we get England that played against Algeria, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, I think if England improve on the last performance, then they'll be a stern test for Germany. But you know, by the same token, Germany have a lot of fluidity and movement and exuberance. No defensively minded midfielders protecting the back four, which I spoke about the last time that we covered Germany on a podcast. Mm. Now it may well be that this World Cup will not need defensively minded midfielders protecting the back four. And I guess this is going to be a game where we're going to find out whether that's the case. My personal instinct is that the reason why Yogi Love is not playing those kind of players is that I don't think he really feels comfortable. I don't think he feels he has good enough players to fill that role. So they've gone for the now familiar, very attacking-minded, young, energetic players, with the exception of Miroslav Klose, who is quite old. He's dropped Bajduber and put Boateng in. So
Boateng, of course, coming back from an injury scare.
Yeah, perhaps a bit more balance in the defence.
Do you think, though, Terry, looking ahead, that if Germany do get past England in this round, if they try and play that way against Argentina, and they don't put a defensive midfielder there to try and stop Messi, they're just going to be torn apart, aren't they?
My personal view, unfortunately, Graham, is that this is the fight to lose to Argentina in the quarter final. I don't think either side are necessarily good enough to beat Argentina in the quarter final. Although I think that perhaps for the reasons that you've just hinted upon, and we've just said, Graham, that England perhaps have more balance in their team to be able to give Argentina a few more problems. But I'm not convinced England will have improved sufficiently enough to be able to stop Argentina's magnificent attack. So it is very much go Mexico if we're going to get past Germany. So who I do very much fancy us against. But getting back to this game, there's definitely areas where England can really exploit. I can't wait to see how Philip Lahm and Ashley Cole go up against each other. Right back and the left back. That's going to be fantastic.
Lahm's really been a mountain for Germany. I think he's been cracking in this tournament.
But he's going to have to cope with, I think we can say, we hype the England team up, people hype the England team up an awful lot, but I think it is a fact that Ashley Cole is one of the best left backs in the world. Yes. And I don't think you find too many people genuinely arguing with that perspective, and to see him against Lahm, who's one of the best right backs in the world, albeit a marauder rather than a defender. It's going to be really, really interesting. In fact, the fullbacks, Boateng against Johnson, is going to also be a really, really fascinating clash. And what do England do about Ozil? Will they try and stop him? And who? Will it be Barry who'll try and stop him? Are they going to have to get
Barry's job?
It's got to be Barry's job, isn't it, to try and stop him? Which I think is going to be really, really interesting. And then similarly, Germany have got similar problems. I mean, if Rudy plays well, and well, that's a big if. But if he plays well, he's going to cause tremendous problems for those two centre halves, Mertesacker and Friedrich, and similarly Defoe, who's a really, really quick, lethal striker. There's just so much on offer here that I'm hoping that I think I've managed to just about put aside the nervousness about this. These are two really well balanced teams. Two well-matched teams. I suspect England just have the greater experience and the greater balance. But you know what? I thought that last night against USA, Ghana, and was wrong. Yes. So, I don't know. Who knows?
Well, as far as the teams are concerned, England have got, for the first time under Fabio Capello, an unchanged team. So that means we've got all those players that we've pretty much just mentioned in the course of our usual dialogue there. We've got Defoe back up front. And I guess, really, you have to play someone like Defoe or Crouch because... speaking perhaps obviously here, but when you play Heskey as a sort of a non-scoring striker, so to speak, as a support for Rooney, if Rooney's not scoring, why is Heskey there? So I guess you've got to have someone to fall back on by way of a striker who can stick the ball in the back. And if Rooney has another quiet game, and God knows it's about time he started to perk up a bit when it comes to scoring. But so we've got Defoe there, we've got... Barry, you mentioned Barry just a moment ago, and somebody on Twitter the other day came out with a classic line, which was that milk turns quicker than Gareth Barry. And joking aside, I mean, you mentioned about Boateng being up against him. That could perhaps be a point of vulnerability. But I guess, Graham, it's said that the German defence could be a bit susceptible to set pieces. So maybe England might be trying to make the most of those.
Yeah, if we can, I think that's probably more likely off a corner than a free kick. I think we're always quite a bit dangerous against at corners because we've got so many players who are really good in the air. We score so many goals by set pieces as well, especially in tournament football. So it's. Yeah. Definitely we'll be looking at to explore any sort of weakness in the back that Germany have there. But I can't call this game really. I really don't know which way it's going to go. No, which is good. I'm actually looking forward to it, which usually I'm not with a game of this sort of power. But I'm looking forward to this one.
Very briefly, lads, because we've not got long to go before we have to break off and actually watch this game. Talking about an unchanged team for England, Upson remains in situ. Carragher is back from suspension, but has not got his starting place back again. How do we feel about that?
Fine.
Do you have any particular strong views on that?
Yeah, no. I'm not entirely convinced, but I'm not going to argue with Fabio on this one.
No.
Yeah, having a sort of fixed back four, that's very good. To pick up someone who's got better defenders,
I just think Upson played pretty well by his standards. He's looked a little bit iffy at times playing in an England shirt, but I thought he did well on in the last game against Slovenia, so I say why not leave it at that, really. We shall see.
Yeah. Well, you know, in a couple of minutes' time, you know, the listeners are going to start hearing our half-time analysis. So
yeah, they're going to start hearing us backtracking on everything.
Very soon.
All right. Well, I think we could go on forever, basically, about all the various ins and outs of all the team selection and whatever. But I reckon that's a good place to draw a line under matters. We're now going to go off and watch the first half. You will hear from us again in a few moments' time, and we'll give you the benefit of our opinions with regards to a first half review. So we'll speak to you in a moment. Ah, right. Well, this will be part two then. Graham? Anything anybody wanted to bring up there? I think if we can't come up with anything to talk about after a first half like that, then frankly we shouldn't be doing this job. The score at this stage, as if you didn't already know, is 2-1 to Germany. It was all looking a bit black, frankly, from an English point of view, after Germany went 2-0. But things are looking a bit more upbeat, aren't they, Graham, now as we sort of see the second half approaching?
Well, upbeat in the way that neither side can defend. So we're you know, due for more thrills and spills and comedy gaffes in the second half. I know there's been a hell of a lot of action in that half, but and the last sort of like 10 minutes or so have detracted from some very, very glaring large glaring problems with England at the moment.
Cool, I'll say.
Even if we do get through this game, you know, you can't see us coming through against a decent team. Germany are not a decent team, and God knows how they're 2-1 ahead, but you know, we are awful. And yes, people will shout and scream about that incident, which Terry will expand upon further.
Over to you, Terry.
But we can't escape from the fact that Upson can't defend and Rooney just shouldn't be on the pitch.
Funny you should say that. I may well elucidate on that, but Terry, I suspect you're not going to disagree with that.
No, I can't disagree with that. I only slightly disagree. I thought the Germans were much better than perhaps Graham is suggesting, but apart from at the back. But then that's nothing new. We were talking about German defence before now, so that isn't a surprise. But going forward, they're a joy. They're brilliant. Mm. But in fairness, they are the knife through the proverbial butter, and you know, England's defence is shambolic. The fullbacks are too narrow, and Upson is not redeemed by his goal. No. You know, his defending has been shocking. His complete inability to pick up, you know, a striker that a succession of, you know, I would suggest supposedly inferior Bundesliga centre backs have been able to do all season.
He can't keep up with Closer. He can't out-muscle Closer. Then what's the point of him being there?
He's making Closer look quick. He makes Closer look quick, and Closer is not quick. I mean, he is slow. He's Slosser. It's just really, really bad. But I mean, it's suddenly all turned around on its head with the taking advantage of, again, some poor defending. I mean, Upson suddenly finding himself with yards of space when there's actually only 6 yards in the 6-yard box, and yet he seemed to have more than that.
He doesn't even head it; and, it bounces off his face.
Yeah, we were extremely fortunate to get that, and then obviously extremely unfortunate to not be given the equaliser.
Which is the goal off the underside of the bar?
I don't think anybody could. I mean, it's one of those incidents when the only person on the field who doesn't see it cross the line is the person who has to make the call. And that's linesman. What's happened is a long-range shot from Lampard, isn't it? And the linesman is up with play, but of course the ball has hurtled off, and had he been further down the pitch. Now, in the Europa League, there'd be a guy behind the goal, and he would have seen it straight away, called it, and then it would have been a goal. But we won't be having that until Euro 2012, I mean, obviously it's carrying on in there, but I mean, this may hasten the introduction of that particular rule, or it's conceivable that already on Twitter the calls for goal line technology have already started, which I think is actually quite crass, to be honest with you, because you know, we're in the middle of a football match here, so come on, well, let's put our agendas to one side, can we? You know, it's just really. I mean, I'm tingling with excitement. I can't wait for the second half. It's brilliant stuff.
I said to Graham just before we come on for the second part, I'm actually kind of enjoying it in a strange sort of way. It's actually a really good match, However, the pain has been numbed somewhat by the fact that England have pulled one goal back and are now starting to show a bit more sort of positivity. But in terms of in defence, I just think that the back four are playing far too far up. I mean, they're just a quick 1-2 and that's it. It's like open season for the German attackers. Yeah. And I just think, what on earth? And definitely, I just want to say, actually, just to clarify a point in case anyone's going to start sending me abusive and laughing up their sleeves emails, that when I suggested that Upson should play today, it was only on the basis that he'd played in the last game. And I sort of, you know, I guess that maybe he could like string two decent performances together. It shows how wrong I was. Just generally in defence, and particularly Upson, it's just not looking good at all. And in spite of the fact that Upson scored, I think I would still take him off at half time to replace him with King, Carragher, whoever.
Yeah, I think you know, also coming off has got to be Rooney. What the hell is he doing on there? He can't control the ball even at the moment.
I'm glad you said that, because I suspected I was going to probably be shot down in flames. But I made a note during the first half, which is to basically say, yes, he's obviously an excellent player and scores goals for fun for Manchester United. But does there come a point, fellas, where you have to sort of say this guy is no longer effective, or he's not at the moment effective, and therefore we need to try somebody else? It's a real sort of tricky one, isn't it? I don't know how you feel about that.
Well, you say that now, but of course you'll be talking a different language after the end of the game when he scores three goals and we win 4-1.
Well, that's the thing. If you take him off, you miss out on, of course.
On the evidence of the tournament so far, he has contributed absolutely nothing apart from controversy. Mm. And it's difficult to see why he continues to play, aside from the fact of what he promises to give us if he's able to play. Mm. But on the strength of what we've seen, there's very little grounds for him to be playing even in the second half. I would perhaps posit the question: who would you put on instead? Crouch?
Yes.
Heskey?
Crouch gives you at least the height option. Yeah, definitely.
Against those two centre halves, Crouch should have them for breakfast and be able to score. Yeah, yeah. I mean,
and he can control the ball.
Yes. And you can't get the ball off of him as well, because he's a big, strong guy, and he controls the ball. You know, he's got a good touch for a big man.
And you know what?
I don't know whether that's been ever said before.
I think the referee might be in the mood to give us a penalty somewhere early in the second half.
I think that when the referee realises what's happened, and he will realise as soon as he gets back into his dressing room, that I think that we're due for a big, healthy dose of luck. If I'm Capello, I'm telling my forwards to go into the box and go down like
try
a sack of potatoes. Because the chances are there's definitely a penalty in this one.
Hmm. Yes.
Because the thing is,
we have been robbed. It's got to be said. We've been robbed of a second goal. And so, you know how it works. We all know how it works.
Indeed. But that was one of the things that before the match, I'm not sure if we mentioned it or if it was just an idea rattling around in my head, that there was this sort of slightly soft underbelly in the German defence that could be exploited. It just needed England's attackers or midfielders or whatever to run at pace at them and actually attack them with a bit of speed. But that's the one thing I think that's been as lacking as anything else, is just that England have looked quite calm and composed in building up these attacks. But as soon as they get to the final third, it all just slows down and grinds to a complete halt. When you should be stepping up the pace, not slowing down.
I think in fairness they're having trouble, because I think the Germans are playing quite narrow and they're having trouble weaving their way through, because possession isn't something they're terribly good at, England. And so they're having trouble trying to string some balls together to find their way through the opposition bodies. They're not doing anything particularly special. They're just getting in the way.
Mm. Yeah, but Terry, when they did try that, when Defoe and Lampard linked up and ran through the defence and midfield, we ended up with a free kick in a really good position. Because when you actually try and keep the ball on the floor and actually run at the players, they're shown up.
Mm. Oh, it's the correct strategy. It's just a question of whether or not they can actually physically execute.
And of course, you've got one of your forwards, half your strike force, isn't capable of doing that at the moment for some reason.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, he's very good at passing the ball to the opposition, but that's just about it for the time being. But,
yeah.
You know, we can only hope that he will get better next in the second half, because he ain't coming off. So he's going to have to deal with it.
Well, but Germany, I mean, it was very strange. It all started off pretty well for England, and it's all too easy now to compare every England performance to the one that they had against Algeria, where there was just there was no communication between them, there was no kind of there's no passing or anything like that. And in this game, it started off, England looked perfectly calm and collected and all of that. And it's and so when the goals went in for Germany, it was just sort of, it left me sort of, funnily enough, I didn't sort of think, oh, well, that's it, we're going to lose sort of 10-0 now. I actually sort of thought, well, there is still the potential for England to, if they can just tighten up in defence, then there is, there's something there. They could sort of pull this back. And I was rather gratified that my confidence in them was redeemed when they got one goal. So,
Let's not beat about the bush here. I mean, up until the 35th minute, it did look for a moment as though we're going to get overrun here. We're going to get absolutely muddled. But actually now, those last 10 minutes, this is a game both teams can win. We're going to see more goals in this second half. And England can still win this match, but it's going to be
it's going to need a real sea change. And I think they're just going to need to, if, I don't know if it's possible, they're going to need to have to pick up right from where they left off and attack them with the same sort of momentum. But I'm not sure if that's going to be possible, really.
Yeah. Yes. I just wonder, though.
Go on.
How well's that tunnel underneath the team bath getting on?
The what? Sorry?
Oh, for God's sake, Terry, there was an escape to victory.
Sorry.
Even I got that one, Tel. Come on.
God's sake. What is this? 40 Towers?
I mentioned it once and I think I got away with it.
Thrones. I think that's our cue to finish, isn't it?
As good a time as any to wrap up this second part, actually, before we go into a stream of quotes from the comedy classics. Right, that's that. Time we got on and watched the second half of the match. We'll be speaking to you in just a few moments' time.
You will. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, here we are, part three of the podcast, and let's get the nasty details out of the way. First of all, it finished 4-1 to Germany, and, I detect... an air of, as you said, I think, Terry, a sort of philosophical air, really. I think my own personal feeling is that England showed that they truly weren't capable of perhaps progressing that far in this particular competition, at least with a defence that was that poor, and Germany exploited that obvious weakness and to their great advantage. And as you said, Terry, had England maybe got another goal or two, and certainly there were chances near the start of the half, could have been a different story, but that would have perhaps been a bit of a false outcome if it had happened.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that we would necessarily have won the game if we had got an equaliser. So if the equaliser had been allowed that Frank Lampard scored, or if we had taken one of the number of chances that we had early in the first half to equalise, then I still would have said, in hindsight, that I would have still suggested that Germany would still have won the game. But obviously not quite so emphatically. I mean, we got spanked because for two reasons. One, because we were pushing everybody forward and we got hit on the break. And because we're not able to make elementary sort of like defensive cover for being hit on the break, which, you know, most professional football teams do. And... yeah, we weren't able to do that, so that pretty much sums up that.
Terry, did you find that whole second half very, very reminiscent of the 5-1?
There was echoes of Munich, wasn't there? It was a bit of a stroll.
When you look at Michael Owen's goals.
Yeah, which kind of that was the death knell, wasn't it? And then after that, I mean, in the 5-1, Germany were just shell shocked by what was going on around them and caved in, and that's what's happened to us. I don't know. I mean, you know, Germany still went on to. I think they went further in the World Cup in 2000. They did, didn't they? They went to the final as a consequence of that qualifying campaign. I can't quite see England doing anything. You know, doing anything. I don't know whether or not. I mean, I think it's too the nerves and the emotions are too raw to start screaming inquest and demanding sackings. But it certainly does bring to a close the whole sort of golden generation. And that brings that all to an end now, and maybe, you know, we might be able to move on without.
It's a question of the fact of sackings or anything like that. I think it's more of a because, you know, we've seen England teams for years, and, you know, all these managers can't be that rubbish. It's just obviously that these players just can't transfer from club
tournament
to
mentality.
International. I think that's the only player that's ever been able to do it. Well, the only player who's ever been able to play better for England than his club is Singleton Gazza. And we've never been able to replace him.
that's going back a long way, isn't it? But you're right. Yeah, I mean, our best club player country player was Gazza. I was thinking, ruminating about what to do about Joe Cole, for instance, who I think is probably, although not on the evidence of this World Cup, been one of those players that can produce better form for country than club. And one was toying with the idea of a kind of rugby cricket style centrally contracting players and having them play for England and loaning them out to clubs and working it like that. But it's all fanciful now. It's all utterly meaningless at the moment. We've just been taken to pieces and everything is at fault. The players, the structure, our tactics, the Premier League. We play in a domestic league that doesn't suit.
We've got the best league in the world, Terry. Let's stick to that
in the future, shall we? Focus.
Yeah,
on that
well, that's right. Podcast. Why don't we just from next season, the podcast will completely ignore all other leagues and think got competitions apart from the Premier League. Because it's the only thing that we do well. And I mean, it is an entertaining and exciting league, an extremely popular league, but it isn't one suited to international competition, and it doesn't generate international class players. And we have to accept this. That's fine.
Well, now when I was out the other night, and I told you, Terry, didn't I, that if England won this World Cup, it would only be because it was an utterly shit tournament. And the thing is, the way it's panning out, it's actually becoming quite a good tournament.
So, logic of that, England
were never going to win.
Yeah.
But it's true. I mean, like you can only imagine an England side ever winning a World Cup when everyone else turns up and are absolutely crap.
Well, you have to say, under the circumstances, that there's evidence to suggest that that could have been, I wouldn't say right across the board that everyone would have been crap, but there's, when you consider the likes of France and Italy, there's two names I'm plucking from the air straight off, that there were perhaps possibilities there. England needed it to be put on a plate.
Well, actually, the good side of it is the fact that France went out early, which means that we may even still be able to hold on to our seeding next time. But there is no guarantee.
We will have to qualify first, obviously. But Italy's problems are to do specifically with the squad and their players, and probably selection issues with the manager, who weren't able and ready to let go of the 2006 players. France's problems are just on another planet and have very little to do with actual football. England's problems, I think, are actually systemic and harder to resolve, I think, because you can't just sack the manager and clear out all the squad, because who would you replace them with?
I was going to say earlier,
I don't think that is the problem, because it's more, as you say, it's systemic, so it's throughout the whole game. People don't want to change the game in this country because they're very much like the way that it operates at the top level, in club football. So there is no way that people want that to change, and they don't want the way that football is from kids level.
We talked about actually, didn't we, last week off air? Funnily enough, not on the podcast, but we talked about the England youth squad and the new change in direction there. But I mean, we also said that those England players that beat Spain in the is it the under 17 European Championship? Those players, if they're going to probably prosper and become good international players, are probably going to have to move to the continent and play in Spain or Germany or Italy or France, in order to develop their skills. Otherwise, they're just going to get mangled up by the Premier League,
And one could argue that we had that sort of situation back in the early 80s, which did at least lead to some success going on towards sort of Italia 90 or whatever, if you maybe tenuously trying to link those together.
But I think that goes back to what I mean, Italian Nightly was a real I've subscribed with Graham's view. Italian Nightly was a really was a poor tournament.
Oh, it was,
and that's why England were able to subscribe. I mean, England managed to succeed despite the fact that all of their players have been banned from European competition for the last 5 years. Hmm. You know, I mean, in a way, it's a bit of a miracle how they've managed to pull it together. But again, I mean, there was Platten, and of course, Paul Gascoigne and, you know, Gary Lineker, really, really, really good players. Mm. Just holding it all together. But there's nothing like that here, and there doesn't look like there's going to be anything like that here. And, you know, I mean, 20 years on from Italia 90, which was a linchpin, a pivotal tournament for foreign listeners, it can't be underestimated what a important tournament Italia 90 was for English football after Hillsborough, so soon after Hillsborough, when football was seriously being pushed out to the margins of society, you know, and we managed to turn around, and now we're 20 years on, and you know, we've just had this absolutely dire tournament, and it's difficult to see how worse it could have been, short of failing to qualify for the second stage, which of course, you know, was a likelihood.
Well, I'm just sort of, this is really kind of going out on a limb, but I mean, in view of that and the fact that England did do well in 1990 and then followed that up by not qualifying for the World Cup in 1994, is there any room to make the leap of faith and think that maybe that could, I know we're talking 4 years hence, but is that something, a likelihood that we can't write off at this stage?
Well, we've got to look at the fact that we didn't qualify for
the last 2 years,
2008.
Yeah, we've got that to look forward to.
So, you know, we've still got to be able to get back into, like, you know, we've still got to be in Poland and the Ukraine in 2 years' time. And that's the next.
We've got to worry. We're going to lose a lot of. I mean, we are going to lose some players. I'm sure we'll lose some senior players as a consequence of this. Maybe not for Euro 2012 qualifying, but for Euro 2014. Well, these players have dominated the England squad for years. You know, guys like Gerrard, guys like Terry, Rio Ferdinand, Frank Lampard are at an age now where they might well be scratching their heads, thinking, "Do you know what? I might just do what Paul Scholes did and quit.
Yeah,
just concentrate on my club." You know, Steven Gerrard's thinking, I'm probably going to be playing for Real Madrid. I'm moving to Spain. Do I really want the hassle of playing for England? And who could blame him? He's never really played that well for England, and all he's liable to get is stick. So, you know, maybe he will be in his best position to quit. So we've got this generation, the golden generation, who are now probably leaving over the next couple of years. We've got to select replacements for them and make them work and still deal with the systemic problems that we have. I think that, you know, I think England have got more problems ahead of them over the next couple of years. And I agree with Graham. I think qualification for Euro 2012 is by no means assured. And in fact, surely we won't be seeded. Will we be seeded since we didn't turn up in the last tournament?
You'd have to doubt that, wouldn't you?
Have we had the draw? Have I missed that? I can't
remember. No, we have. Yeah, we've had the draw for that, haven't we?
All right, so I can't remember what we got. Yeah, of course.
Because it starts in like August.
Yeah. Yes, I wrote the articles. Anyone who what the draw was about? I'll have to forgive me, listeners. I'm a bit emotional.
Well, no, I mean, just very quickly going back to the point, because we are sort of running out of time, but I was going to say earlier on, in terms of the whole thing about sack the manager, I mean, if we can't, you know, if with a manager of Fabio Capello's quality, and we haven't sort of qualified, there doesn't seem a lot of point in sacking him, because I'm sure he's sort of done, well, qualification showed that he did a tremendous job, so it's just going to be, you know, with the players available next time around, getting them playing better when we qualify for the finals of whatever it is, whether it's the Euros or whatever. But yes, there we are. England's tournament is over at this stage then, and that doesn't mean to say we're not going to be podcasting for the rest of the World Cup, because I'm sure there's much better games, much more better action, shall we say, to watch between now and the end of the competition that we can focus on. We'll be back for more podcasting soon. I think such is our mood at the moment. I think we should now just tune into Radio 5 Live and listen to your man Green there. Alan Green just lift our spirits. He's got that bad, everyone.
Because Alan Green really knows how to help lift our spirits, doesn't he?
He's your man, really. But there we are. Hope you enjoyed listening to our ever more depressing musings as the podcast went on. As I say, we'll be back for another one soon. So thanks for your company. Hope you can join us again soon. Don't forget to visit footballfairground.com, which is where you can indulge in all of the stuff that we're outputting at the moment. Sound of Football, some people on the pitch, the Onion Bag, you name it, it's all there. And keep watching the skies, that is Twitter, and indeed the Sound of Football website for more details of when we're going to be podcasting next. But we hope you can join us again for another one soon. Until then, it's goodbye from myself, from Terry, and from Graham. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.